Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers. FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment. Trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay.
Free the Black Panthers. FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements with black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here. Fuck coins, hell pro.
Show.
They got me started, lying hearted. I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we rise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, if you think this shit won't be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here. Fuck coins, hell pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, shit, that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police departments to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prisons. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
Holler if you hear me. Yeah. Here we go, turn it up, let's start. From block to block, we're snatching hearts, we're jacking marks. And the punk police can't fake the American. We can have six, some safety. But right now I got my mind set up. Looking down the bottle, I'm a scared up. Cause it's time to make the payback back. To my brothers on the block, better stay strapped. Until then.
I fight you, I fight myself. I fight God to tell me how many burdens left. I fight pain and hurricanes, today I wept. I'm trying to fight back tears, flood on my doorstep. Life is living hell, puddles of blood in the street. Shooters on top of the building, government aid ain't relief. Earthquake, the body drop, the ground breaks. The poor run with smoke lungs and scarred face. Who need a hero?
Hero.
You need a hero, look in the mirror, there go your hero. Who on the front lines at ground zero?
Hero.
My heart don't skip a beat even when hard times bumps the needle. Mass destruction and mass corruption, the souls of suffering men. Clutching on deaf ears again, rapture's coming. It's all prophecy, and if I gotta be sacrificed for the greater good, then that's what it gotta
you
be.
Pray for me.
National Chairwoman Sister Krista Muhammad. Call in right now, 718-664-6398. Press the number one. You're live here tonight with the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. Welcome, welcome, family, here on day 527. Live with your host tonight, Brother Cassius Sadiq, National Chief of Staff, co-hosting this broadcast tonight with our National Minister of Culture, Brother Greg. Can you hear me, comrade? Black power.
Black power. I can hear you loud and clear, bro. Loud and clear.
Yes, we have a special broadcast tonight on day 527, and our topic, developing and defending Black communities. Tonight, our National Minister of Culture, Brother Greg, has brought on a great brother in Dr. Akil Kalfani, who we see he's ready to go. Let us know you can hear us tonight, Brother Dr. Kalfani. Can you hear us? Black power, all power to the people.
All power to the people. Yes, of course I can hear you, my brother. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing great, brother. I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to have you on. I want to welcome you. We know this is your first time on our broadcast, and I've heard nothing but good things. We've heard nothing but good things about the work that you have done in New Jersey and really across this country. So we're very honored to have you on tonight, brother, and we know it's going to be a great broadcast. Welcome. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you very much, brother. I'm glad to be here, and to be in the midst of our brothers and sisters who continue to struggle for upliftment of African people in the U.S. and around the world. You know, we have to make sure that as we see what we do, no matter what our capacity is, that everybody has an important contribution to make, and that we see our contributions as a collective contribution, and that we do so in concert is really the thing that we've got to do, brother.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I know we're going to get deeper, and we want to give you time to just break everything down and talk about all the great work you've done. But before we do that, I want to allow for our National Minister of Culture, Brother Greg, who brought you on tonight. We thank you, Brother Greg, to give you a proper introduction into this broadcast. We say to all of our listeners, if you have questions as this broadcast continues along, press the number one, and we will put you live in tonight's discussion as we're joined tonight by our brother, Dr. Akil Kalfani. We also want to welcome on our national chairwoman, Sister Krista Muhammad. Can you hear us, Queen, as we're broadcasting?
Yes, 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 definitely Black Power. We want to thank you, Doctor, for coming on as well. We've heard so many great things about you. We spoke with our national national field marshal, Brother Sharif Amenhotep, and he also told us the great work that you have been doing for our community, for the people of Newark, and for our people as a whole. And we most definitely want to thank our National Minister of Culture, Brother Greg, for bringing you on, as well as our National Chief of Staff, Brother Kathy, for hosting the show. But we want to remind everybody that's listening that this is an honor for us to have our brother on tonight. We want to have you to get your pens and paper out and get ready to take notes and to follow up on what's going to be presented to you. This is not just for entertainment. This is edutainment. So welcome to our network, and we're looking forward to hearing all the great works and things that you guys have going, Black Power.
Black Power, Black Power. I can go on for half the show with an introduction. I'll keep it short. It's more than an honor and a privilege to have you on, Dr. Kalfani. I know about a lot of the great things that you've been doing in the city. I studied under Dr. Gunther for about a good year. A few years before you came on board and did a tremendous job just picking up where he left off at the Africana Institute here at Essex County College. And it's just been, you know, a pleasure just to see the growth of the Africana Studies Department. I've met quite a few people, you know, after I studied with Dr. Gunther, come out of there. And it's just been amazing, you know, just been an amazing, you know, journey just watching how you've just transformed and just taken things to a much, much higher level. And I know you got a lot that you want to share tonight, so I'll leave the introduction right there. And as our sister, National Chairwoman, said, take out those pens and pads, hit that number one button. This is, this is another great show, a great opportunity of bringing to our people the things that we need to help build our community, to build that unity that so many people are talking about. And we have a doctor on the show tonight that's going to lay out some great, tremendous things for us. No further ado, the floor is yours, Dr. Kalfani. Black Power.
All right, brother, man. Power to the people. You know, I'm glad to be here today and really to think about the things that we need to be talking about as Africans. You know, we have these, sometimes we have all these discussions about a wide variety of topics, and if y'all have anything you want to ask or say, please feel free to kind of chime in and ask anything or push a direction you want to be raised, because I think that we've got to come to terms with the legacy of those who made it possible for us to be here, right, so that you call me doctor, and that's true. But really, what I am, I'm a humble servant of the people, right? So I'm a somebody who strives to bring the things that our ancestors paved the way for to fruition. you know, so that the things that they died for. Because when I got my bachelor's, right, what I said is that my bachelor's of science was not a bachelor's of science degree. The BS stood for bloodshed, because somebody died for me to be here. Somebody died for us to be in these places and spaces that we're in. And unfortunately, people continue to die, but that we are striving to live and striving to create a different reality for our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and so on and so forth. So that's the legacy on which we all stand, right? That's the legacy on which things with even the Panther Party that you all as the foundation of that, that's what they stood on. People have all these misconceptualizations about things. But we have free lunch in school today because of the Panthers. People forget about those kind of simple, pragmatic things that were brought into being by African people, right? That we have streetlights because an African created the streetlight. You go down the street with your shirt pressed because somebody came up with the ironing board and the iron and all these different things that we brought to the table that we're continuing to bring to the table. You know, it was interesting. It's a slight detour, but there was a brother I just saw, a brother from I can't remember if he was from Ghana or Nigeria, but I just read the other day that this brother is the person who's still alive today who created the whole who took the idea of fiber optics to the place where it's utilized today and the capacity to which it has. He has the patent on fiber optic technology, and we don't even know that the internet with the speeds and everything else that we have, that this brother was the person who did that. He worked for Corning, the company that does the Pyrex dishes, I believe. He worked for them, but he used that his genius to come up with fiber optics and made it possible for us to have high speed internet around the globe. And you know, all these different iterations of who we are as Africans. And I think that when we look at us as a people, we've got to go back to the source, right? The whole idea of Sankofa. When we think about Sankofa, Sankofa is a Ghanaian word, right? It means it's okay to go back and get that what you've forgotten, because we've forgotten so much. But the ancestors and the elders tell us that this life is one of remembering, right? That we've got to find out what it is that we forgot, but to do so, it really is about, we keep looking for external things, these degrees and this, that, and the other, and I'm not saying that those are not important, but actually on some level, they're secondary, because the true source of our intellectual greatness is embedded in us, and so this life of remembering is recalling upon that stuff that's in your DNA, right? So that in the core of who we are, that and I'm often called on to do libations at a lot of events. And one of the things I always say is that really there's only but one time, right? So that as we think about who we are and our ancestors and our progeny, our children, that is, that we think about the fact that in your DNA, you, a piece of you physically, not something spiritually, not something esoteric, physically, a piece of your DNA was at the beginnings of time. So that means that embedded in your DNA, in the essence of who you are, that you literally were there at that time. And so that if we learn how to tap into the essence of who we are, that then, in fact, we can call upon the essence of that and bring it forth to the present. Right? And so it doesn't matter if you have to do that through spiritual attunement. It doesn't matter if you have to do that through meditation, if you have to do that through dreams, through all whatever the methodology is, but realize that the greatness of you and of your ancestors are within you, and you have possession of that. And once we realize we have possession of that, there really is nothing that can stop us. Right? There's nothing and no one who can prevent us from achieving our excellence, our greatness. And same thing is that this is where we have responsibility, though. Once we realize that we also realize that we are now encoding the DNA for our grandchildren's grandchildren and their great-great-grandchildren, and so then the things that you do and put into your vessel, your body, your mind, your spirit, the things that you insert into that are the things that are going to be embedded in the DNA memory circuit board for your great-grandchildren and their grandchildren's grandchildren. Now, to me, that's powerful, right? That it's not then just enough for us to go around thinking about us as individuals when we think that we're adding to, if we think of our bodies, our minds, like this computer, that we're adding to this future computer. And really what this is reminiscent of, if you've ever heard of the brothers and sisters from Timbuktu, right, they have all these ancient libraries, the Greeks and some of the Arabs and other folks went around destroying libraries in Africa and other places around the world. But what some of the Africans did is that they hid and buried those libraries and made them so that those folks who were trying to destroy them never touched them. And those libraries, I have a buddy of mine, a friend of mine, a great scholar named Khufu Zuberi, who went and did this whole research on Timbuktu, and those libraries still exist for now hundreds of years, and maybe even thousands of years. But the one of the genius things that they did is they have something called these living books. And in the living books, your father writes in the book, and maybe his father before him, but you now as the son carry on the legacy, and you adding to the book that your father and your grandfather was writing in, so that the story of your lives and the things happening around you are on a continuum for generations, and so that this book is something that is living in that way, that your father, once deceased, has a continuing novel or autobiography that becomes your biography, your autobiography, that now you're building on the footsteps, the footprints of your father and your grandfather and your grandfather's grandfather, right? And so then as you're contributing to that, this is a physical, real, existing book that then you, what you contribute to that is the legacy for your children, for your sons, for your daughters. And if we think about our own bodies, our own vessels, in the same way that we're contributing to the narrative, the story of that, and so that when we look at what you guys are doing now as part of the New Black Panther Party, right, you're building on the footsteps of Brother Khalid Abdul Muhammad, right, of all those folks who came before you who were on this path striving and struggling to bring about change, that you're building on that for the children who may not be your biological children, but your children nonetheless. And that's how we have to think about the totality of what we bring to the table. That this life that we live is one of building a legacy. You know, I give a speech a lot of times on as a speech that I talk about and call the stomp like an elephant or walk like an elephant. And in that talk, I say that sometimes we walk lightly, and we want to, you know, we want to just be our own selves and do our own things, and we walk like a peacock. And as beautiful as a peacock is, and its plume and its tail, when it walks, a lot of times it drags its tail, and you don't see its footprints. So the question is, why would you? How many of us are wiping out our footprints so that the people come behind us don't see where we went? Right? We have an obligation to walk like an elephant. I'm gonna come back to that narrative as we go through tonight. But those are the kind of my introductory remarks. There's several things I want to cover tonight. One is also about this discussion about reparations. Some of us shy away from it or don't like it or whatever, but I think that there's some important stuff we can talk about that we can...
We don't shy away from it on this network. We all for it. Let's do it.
Yes, 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 yes. That's what I'm talking about. That's why I'm here.
yes, sir, brother.
But before we get there, I just want to say that this way of thinking and doing, knowing that the Sankofa is the foundation of us changing a reality so that we create a pathway for those who come after us to do something in a different way, because we now see and understand our past, that then we move to another whole embarkment on what we're doing. And you know, part of it is that a lot of us, when we talk about our past, some of us don't want to talk about it, right? I don't want to hear about it, see another movie about slavery. I don't want to see another thing about the South or about white supremacy or about all these other things. And I listen to that, and I'm a sociologist by training. I have a master's, a PhD in sociology. What that reminds me of when people say stuff like that, though, is that they are not clear on the story and why we need to listen to those things. Because if you haven't gone through the pain, if you don't feel it, if you haven't watched the movie Sankofa, right? Or if you haven't, that's a dynamic movie. If people haven't seen it, I believe it came out in the 80s. But I think that everybody should watch that movie. It should be something that's on all of our to-do lists. Another movie is 1804. It's a documentary, right, a docudrama. But that's another great movie about Haiti. Even Amistad, I think, even though it has some Hollywood kind of stuff in it, I think that even that has some benefit. And when you think about them, though, the point is that once you've gone through the pain, once you've had to cry, right? We all sometimes don't want to say stuff like that. We don't want to feel no pain. I'm tough. You know, none of this stuff hurts me. No, when I see a sister being raped, molested, that hurts me. You know, it not only doesn't anger me, but it also emotionally it hurts. And so we've got to feel the hurt so that we can direct our frustrations, we can direct our pain, direct our anger in the right direction. See, because when we don't have a direction, if we don't have that grounding, because that's really what this is, if we don't have that grounding, then what happens is that our angers and frustrations get redirected to ourselves. And that's why we have our own, all the internal violence we have in the community, because we redirect the things that should be external to internal, to those who are nearest, those who are closest, and we have this kind of a ongoing infighting and conflict that happens, and that's where the problem lies, right? In our conflict and internal conflicts and distrust and things of that nature that we have that have continued, and those things have continued because one we have conditions that lend themselves to that, so. You have extreme poverty in our communities, right? So if people don't have jobs, if they don't have access to feed their families, themselves, their families, then they're going to do something to get that, right? And so whether it's legal or quote-unquote illegal, people are going to feed themselves and their families, and that's what happens, right? And we castigate folks who do those things, but we don't look at the social structural issues that create the conditions for that, and we don't talk about those things. But we've got to look at both sides of the coin, right, the things that we do and how we can transform what we do so that we're not looking for others to create the reality of what we need for ourselves. But at the same time, we have to look at, as Dr. Jeffrey says, we have to have a systems analysis, right? We've got to have a systems analysis to the things that we're looking and talking about so that we have a holistic systematic response to the oppressive conditions in our community, whether it's police brutality or it's forced people not having been able to pay rent and so therefore having homeless issues or shelter issues or even being in a house but having the fear or the threat of being removed because you have housing instability. So all of those things contribute to what happens in our communities, and we have to talk about and look at those things holistically to resolve them, and we oftentimes don't look at them holistically. That becomes part of the problem, right? If we just look at it from a perspective of looking at it and talking about white supremacy, psychological state of being. We got to talk about our educational state of being. We've got to talk about our economic state of being. We got to talk about our political state of being, because there's a difference between being a freedom fighter and someone who does what they do politically. I think that's part of that. That's been in the past part of our problem. And we look at internationally, and we see this on the continent even, that the people who were the freedom fighters were not always the best politicians. And we need to have – there's a great group that I'm a part of doing some studying with now, Aya and Ngolo, and they're doing some powerful stuff. And one of the things they talk about is that we have this mentality in our community about being warriors. You know, we're warriors, this, we're tough, we're strong, this. No, but we – that's a flawed analysis, and I've come to agree with their interpretation of this. And it's not good enough just to be a warrior. We've got to be warriors, healers, and builders, right? We've got to talk about what does it mean to build something. What do we go in, if we're in battles, we're in war? That means that there's casualties. That means that there's trauma. That means that there's all kinds of negative impacts, and we've got to address those things along the way. So we've got to heal, right? If we're not healing
as a warrior, we have no choice but to do that. As being a freedom fighter, that automatically comes with the territory. When we go into communities that are devastated, it comes hand in hand. We can't see the devastation and not address it. We can't see the people, you know, either broken by spirit or broken physically or socially, economically. So it becomes a part of being a warrior that you have to be a part of the healing. We find us, we have to constantly study. We have to constantly research, because we are getting hit on so many sides. So we totally agree with that point. I just want to say, from a actual warrior in the field for over 30 years, that is an absolute correct analysis, because it is literally what we have to do. Yes, sir.
Yes, right, right. You know, sometimes, though, folks in our community, we just want to be so tough and strong, and rightfully so, but we never get to healing, right? And so then what are we left with? When, say, for instance, we look on the continent and we look at the struggles for liberation, and look who became the leaders in those places, and we ask, did they heal the nation? Not that there's not still intervention from white supremacists and multinationalists trying to undermine the institutions. So we understand that. So I'm not deluded to think that, well, once we win something, that Europeans disappear and that Western influence disappears. No, but we've got to insulate ourselves from those things while we're creating whatever our new set of institutions, while we're creating our new social structure. We've got to recognize that the trauma that our folks have been through. And this brother, there's a brother that wrote a great book. It's called My Grandmother's Hands, Racialized Trauma and what is it called? Racialized Trauma and, I believe, The Pathway to Healing Our Minds and Bodies, by Resma McCunnan. And in that book, he talks about the idea that trauma is actually generational. Not only is it generational, but think about the mother or the woman, right, oftentimes the young girl who was molested, raped on the slave plantation or elsewhere on the slave ship or anywhere else in society. And the impact of that is that if she then has a girl child, that women, when they're born, they have all of the eggs that they're going to have in them. And so that the trauma that she has is, you know, cortisol and all these other hormones and chemicals in the body that the body produces go into the eggs, and the,
the embryo, and so that trauma then goes into the child, and then when that child is born, if it's a girl child, then that means that the trauma, those negative ideas and feelings and emotions and chemicals and hormones have been infected in the eggs that she has. So that means that the next generation, so that means the grandchildren are already traumatized. And so then to heal, we have to think generationally, right? We can't just say that we're going to heal with the current one, but how many generations, how many young children who are born are already traumatized, and then they're traumatized and their children are traumatized. So we have to come up with a solution that looks generationally and looks at the impact of that. How do we create the conditions for non-traumatized sisters when they're pregnant and they're having the next generation? Right, that's another whole mindset that we haven't really talked about or come up with a methodology to create a different reality for our sisters who are carrying the next generation, right? Unless you guys have any questions, I want to move on to reparations. But I'm willing to pause for a moment so we can any responses, thoughts, or whatever before we move to reparations.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I want to take the time to highlight, you know, some great work you've been doing on behalf of our national Field Marshal Brother Sharif Amenhotep and the tragic, you know, loss and murder of his daughter, young Sanaa Amenhotep. You know, I saw our national Field Marshal. He let me know that you were, you know, sitting on the board for the foundation. He also let me know that you spoke at the most recent event that happened. And from the bottom of our hearts, you know, we were on the ground when our little baby went missing. You know what I'm saying? And for 30 days, you know, and to, you know, to have had happen what did, you know, it goes back to what you were talking about, that internal anger in our communities, you know, but that work that you're doing is so dear to us. And we want to thank you from the bottom of our heart for being there for all the comrades. And I wanted to make sure that the people know, you know, and highlight this great work that you're doing, Dr. Black Power.
Yeah, I appreciate that, brother. Thank you so much. I always say that that, you know, if I have the capacity and I've been given the space and the insights from going to school, but really from my parents and parents' parents, and then from our ancestors. So therefore, that they carved out a way for me to be where I am, then I have an obligation to give back. Right. So I give back. Because it's my responsibility. I do what I do willingly because if not me, then who, right? I can't wait for somebody else to carve out the space for us to begin to do the things that we need to do on a level that is needed for our people. And if any of us have any capacity to do that, those kinds of things, then if we sit back and don't do it, then you know, then the ancestors won't look well on us in terms of when we meet the other side and we hope to sit at the table of the ancestors. I hope to have represented them well when I get on the other side. You know what I'm saying, brother?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
So,
Dr. Calhoun. Yeah. I wanted to also add, I was going to ask another question, but it kind of ties in because when you were, we may have to have a, you know, we would ask maybe another call, maybe a conference, but how do we address these traumas? Because even when we were, you know, I was out there for almost a month with the brother,
right.
And it's still a trauma that I'm dealing with, not only the time periods when we were out looking, you know, our brothers have internalized a lot of things as well. You know, the brother kept such a strong face when he would see us, you know, but, you know, we knew he was in pain, so we felt the pain, you know, and as we were out, you know, looking for Sanaa, you know, just looking at the conditions of our people, period, we were in a town that we had never been in before. Mm-hmm. And so we had to hit all kind of neighborhoods, you know, and we found, you know, one side was like, oh, we don't go on that side. That's a blood side. But it's like a little small town, you know, compared to a big city like Houston. You know, we found people who didn't even go on the same, on another side of town based on, you know, bloods and you know, Crips and GDs and all that. But all of them, you know, every last one of these, you know, the brothers that you say, the so-called hard brothers, they all had a heart for this situation, you know. They were like, yo, that's, you know, that's messed up, you know what I'm saying? And we found all kind of people, you know, people who had never come into one side, you know, they came, you know, for the, to help us find this child, but just the social conditions to have, you know, led to what actually happened is just, he said, we need a lot of healing, period, you know, for another, you know, teenagers to do this to one another. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's horrific, you know, and, you know, we so hardened, you know, towards one another, you know, and, you know, when they flash amongst each other, like they so, you know, we act like sometimes our people act like they so hard and gangster against each other, you know, but we found humanity, you know, that part that tugged on everybody, you know, for a young girl to be missing and to see her father looking, you know, and the community looking for, you know, that speaks volume. But again, what's right there? What's that big flashing light? The trauma that's going on in our communities. And I wanted also touch about, and I guess it would maybe lead to reparations and just this whole thing. You know, I recently, just last week, got my DNA back.
Mm-hmm.
49 years old, we found out that our people come from Guinea-Bissau. So I've been so consumed on watching and finding out everything about Guinea-Bissau, right? And I'm looking at these videos, and I'm seeing, you know, the big city built up on one end, but the big city with no roads. You know, like they got the big dirt roads, pothole roads.
Yep.
And I'm seeing all these big buildings that look like they used to be nice buildings, but you can tell they're war-torn from when they had to fight the Portuguese out. And I'm saying to myself, man, if I go to Guinea, how can I help? But then I'm like, damn, we got so much to do right here. So it's like, you know, with the work that we have to do here. So we have so many levels to deal with, and, you know, we're going to have to, I'm even wrestling with myself, like, you know, there's so much work that needs to be done here, but look at how beautiful the motherland is and how maybe we can, you know, like, how can we can contribute to helping with, you know, just some of the developments that we take for granted, like roads, you know, but,
yeah.
You know, but there's something, but they've kept onto our culture. I just find it so fascinating. I can't stop watching how beautiful they look, you know, and keeping the culture and everything. So we are definitely in a unique position. And, you know, it can be a bit overwhelming. But then, to hear, you know, about the think tanks and the groups that you guys are working with that are actually looking at things from a scientific as well as from a practical standpoint is I think is going to be the way that, you know, that's what I would like to put on the table, you know, like, how do we address these things? And, you know, what are some of the things that you might, you know, suggest or what y'all have come up with, you know,
right,
with how we are dealing with these things holistically.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. That's
mm-hmm.
what I would like to ask you about.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. I like that. You know, I would say that two things. I'm going to get to the trauma second. The first thing on the DNA piece, you know, people ask me, have I done that all the time? And I say that no. And the reason that I haven't is because when we look at African culture and history and we begin to think about it from the context of who we are and how we got here, and the places that we may have or may not have come from, I reflect upon the fact that, first of all, historically, there was no Nigeria, there was no Ghana, there was no Guinea-Bissau. These are all European constructs that the Ghana we know today, which was before called the Gold Coast, that area, the name Ghana, the people from what today is called Ghana, that the Ghana empire was actually up where Mali is today, right?
Mali,
so that,
exactly.
You know,
like Guinea-Bissau. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that all these places, and that was called Obervolta before. So all these names came from the Berlin Conference in 1884 and 1885, where it was no Africans there, and all these Europeans divided up Africa for the benefit of Europe, right? And so even the British under Cecil Rhodes had intended, if you look at the picture of Cecil Rhodes, if you just Google Cecil Rhodes, you'll see that their intention was to sew up Africa from Cape to Cairo, so from Egypt to South Africa. And he has one foot on Cape and one foot on Cairo. And that was the idea for them for colonizing the entire continent and controlling it and taking out the resources. If you look at the railroads, most of the railroads historically went from the interior to the coast because they were just extracting the wealth and the resources from the continent and taking them externally. There wasn't about internal commerce and inter-working relationships between the various countries. No, they divided lines straight across people. So in southern Africa, you have Botswana, but right below that, in South Africa, there was something called a homeland that was called Bapatitswana. Well, these were the same people, but there was a border, like the border that Trump tried to build, or is still being built and maintained, but there was a border there that was set that went right through the group of people, so that your grandparents were over there, and you over here, you can't get to them because a European-imposed border. So when we think about who we are, that we take all of it, and that all of it is us. So my name, when I was in an undergrad, you know, it spiritually came to me that a new name was calling me. And so my name is Akil Kokoyi Kalfani. My first name is Swahili. My last name is Swahili. And my middle name is Shona from Zimbabwe. And so Akil Kokoyi Kalfani means intelligent, one who uses reason to summon the people who are destined to rule. What I'm reminded of every time somebody calls my name, I'm reminded that I have a responsibility to transform the realities of my people and to understand it. So I didn't get an opportunity to go to school just so that I could make money. I got an opportunity to get a doctorate so that I can use the knowledge that I had got, the tools that I acquired, to give back to my community. And that's what I do. I take these tools. That's all they are. A degree is nothing but a tool. As long as we see it as that, then we understand the power of it. Otherwise, we look at self-aggrandizement and we're like, oh, I got a doctor, I got a master's, I got a this. No, forget all of that. They're tools. It's just like a screwdriver or a drill bit. The doctorate is just a little bit better of a tool than the master's because it gives you more access, gives you more entree, gives you another set of tools of analysis and being able to do the things that you do more efficiently, more effectively. And if you use them the right way, and you look at go back and read The Miseducation of the Negro, you know that you have to use those tools in ways that are beneficial to your community, because otherwise you use those tools in ways that are beneficial to those who don't have your best interest at heart. And that's been part of the problem, that we've used the tools that we've gotten for the benefit of somebody else and not for the benefit of our people. And so then that's what I'm pushing us to do on a different level, is to change how we look at what we do and do what we do, because we have a responsibility for those who've had the opportunity, whether it's you're an entrepreneur and you got a lot of money, or you got an education and you got some insight, you're writing books or plays or novels or poems, whatever it is that you're doing, that is a tool for you to be able to give back and strengthen your community, right? Otherwise, we end up in another kind of space. And I think that we can't afford, we don't have the leisure to be in another space, because the conditions of our people globally is so profoundly problematic. And we can't just operate, and if we look at Haiti and study Haiti, we'll know that we can't just operate nationally. We've got to operate internationally in all we do. We have to think internationally, so that I haven't gotten the test, but I already know that I'm from Nigeria and Ghana and South Africa and Zimbabwe and Kemet and Kenya and Sudan and the Nubian people, all these places. I take all of it. So when people ask me for where am I from, I say all of it, right? And so I can speak a little bit of the languages from both. So I'll greet people in Zulu. I say Sobona, Unjani, You know, we come in, we have to learn the languages. We also have to learn languages of the oppressors, so I can speak a little bit of Afrikaans. It can understand the BK Afrikaans. You've got to try to learn Spanish and French and Portuguese and Arabic, because these are the languages that have been used to control and dominate us and tell our story, and so we've got to tell our own story. And we can use our own language, too, but we need to know all of those systems, because then that becomes a place of power. If we can, you know, I have a friend of mine, he can speak 11 languages. And I'm like, man, that I wish I had that tool. But I'm forcing myself to learn some more languages so that I can be able to navigate some spaces differently, right? I'll never say that I can't do anything. I just have to take the extra time and the effort to do it, and it may take me a little longer than it took somebody else. But if I put my mind and heart to it, then I'm going to get there, right? And that's how we have to see it, because that's what our ancestors have always been doing. We survived the unsurvivable. Think about this. Look at the traumas that we've been through as a people. The brothers in the islands and in I'm rereading this book on the Black Jacobins in Haiti, the atrocities that they went through. Oh my goodness gracious alive! You when you hear and read about it, it's almost unfathomable, right? That they would burn your hands and feet while you're alive because they want to torture you and then make you stay there alive in that condition. That they would sodomize brothers, what they call buck breaking, to in front of your family and everybody else on the plantation, so to dehumanize you and to make you weak in the eyes of everybody else and threaten them with the same thing. They'd skin the person, burn them, skin them, and take their children to it. All that's trauma, right? And so then seeing that re-traumatizes folks, and so that's why we do stuff. Think about this. Why else, if it wasn't trauma, why else would I respond to you if you happen to step on my shoes by wanting to beat you up or have my boys beat you up overstepping on my shoes if it wasn't for trauma? Because I could just say, you could just say, oh, sorry about that. And sometimes even, I mean, I grew up in South Central Los Angeles, right, in the 80s during the cold crack thing. So when you think about that if somebody, some people would want to fight, deadly fight over stuff like that, and is it really worth all of that? No, it's not. But we've been traumatized so much that we don't have other kinds of responses. We haven't been thought. We didn't think to have a different response because we've been so abused in our relationship to white supremacy that we then meet that same response out to ourselves. And we need to redirect that. We need to come to a place where we're about that we leave some space for things. And I think one of those places, this takes me to trauma. One of those spaces that we've learned, that I've learned over the years in dealing with trauma and confronting things and people who confront me, is just learning to breathe. And that's simple. When something is confrontational and agitating, even to the simple point of driving down the street and somebody cuts you off and you get upset about it, if you stop and breathe, just do that two or three times when the person has aggravated you and created a thing, it changes the value of that to you. And it becomes invaluable to respond to that person in a confrontational way over cutting you off. Okay, well, let that fool go on. You don't have time for that. Because we see, and another part is about prioritizing. We haven't prioritized the things that are necessary as a people. We prioritize that as an individual, right? So that I fight you over my shoes, I'm prioritizing my individual hurt, right? Because really what is, I'm hurt, and I don't want to express it as hurt. I express it as anger and violence because, oh, man, I just got these shoes, or I just cleaned them up, and now you just messed them up. Maybe you're making me look bad out in front of my friends. Oh, man. So that hurt is the thing that we need to address as opposed to responding to it as a source of anger and so on and so forth. But that's because we've allowed others to tell us that we shouldn't have emotions, we shouldn't feel. When that feeling helps you to redirect the things that you're doing, and that's the power in what we're doing, is that that we need to feel those things. We need to feel the hurt of our ancestors. We need to feel the hurt of Brother Sharif and his his daughter's mother, Sister Salima. We need to feel the hurt and pain of them to empathize and then to connect and to build and help. That you all came and assisted our brother wasn't just that you felt obligated, but you felt the hurt and the pain, and that the brothers and sisters that you came, that you talked about making the overture to assist, they didn't just assist because they were then they felt what you were talking about, and they felt the pain of a father. And I think then that those become the things that, that transform what we do so that we have a different response to what's going on. We've got to have a paradigm shift as a people, right? A way of thinking shift. But that
That's
shift,
right.
That shift has to be partially back to our ancestors. And that, because the part of it that is back to the ancestors is, for instance, the idea of Ma'at, right? Ma'at is an ancient Egyptian or Kemetic word that means truth, justice, righteousness, harmony, balance, reciprocity, and harmony. If we focus on Ma'at, think how that would be revolutionary for our people if, when we have conflict with each other, if we think about Ma'at. Because at the time of your demise in ancient Kemet, your heart would be weighed against a feather, right? We've all had the feeling of a heavy heart, right? Yes? You know what that feels like, to have a heavy heart?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So when that's on you, if you keep that and you maintain that feeling of that heavy heart, then what happens is that that can affect your physical well-being, right? You can literally be sick because something is sitting on you oppressively that now it manifests itself in a way that undermines your physical state of being. And so then what would happen at the time of your demise, if you look up Ma'at, you see the scale, the heart weighed against the feather. Now, it's more figurative than a literal thing, because then what you notice is that if you can transform that feeling, that then what happens is that you're able to deal with it, right? So it's not that it's not okay to feel pain. You should feel pain. If someone dies or something traumatic happens, you should feel pain. But the key is that you can't live in that pain, right? If you lose a job or you lose your – that you should and feel the graveness of it, because now you're wondering, struggling how to feed your family. But if you stay with that as opposed to moving to another space or place, then you can't get to the place in a whole way that helps you to move forward. So we've got to move, get this paradigm shift going on so that we begin to think and do differently as a people. We keep doing the same thing, then we're not going to have a different outcome, you know. And I'm not even going to go to the maxims that people typically say about it. I just want us to think and do differently and utilizing this idea of Ma'at. We have got to go back to being African, right? We, as people say that, you know, and I understand that the new Black Panther Party, right? But in reality, I mean, I've been to a lot of places. I've seen a lot of people. I haven't met, but these ideas of color are actually fictitious, right? So that there is no quote-unquote, if you look physically, phenotypically, I've met some really dark-skinned Africans, but ain't none of them black. I met some really pale Europeans, but ain't none of them white. Those are, these conceptualizations are misconceptualizations. And we've got to come up with our own understanding of it so that even if we're using the terms, that we understand why we're using the terms and that it's not something that's being utilized against us, right? Because Fanon would say that blackness only exists as a contradistinction or as an opposition to whiteness. And that whiteness defines what blackness is, so it controls it. So that you look in the dictionary, he's right, right? Anything that's in the dictionary that's organized and created by other folks, we're not writing our own dictionary, then all the things that are black are negative. Why? Why does it have to? I think black is beautiful. But people present it in another kind of way. And, you know, to denigrate, right, de-blacken is what that means, to denigrate. It means to de-blacken, right? That all these things, you want to that we have, we've got to redefine them for ourselves. And that doesn't mean that I'm not of the mindset that we want to go back and say that we want to use the N-word as a term of endearment. Some things we just need to disband, right? We need to move on from. So I'm not one that buys into that. Even though you have folks who try to say, oh, it means the king and back in Africa. Okay, maybe that's true. But some things we need to move on from and come up with a new appellation. We can use there's a whole set of words that we can use to define who we are and where we're going. Another one, in addition to Ma'at, is that we've got to go back to the ideas of an African worldview that look at Ubuntu, right? Ubuntu is a Southern African word that means, it's hard to get a literal translation, but the essence of it is we are, therefore I am, therefore we are, right? Which is in opposition to that Descartes kind of idea of I think, therefore I am, right? Which is about the individual. No, we can't be about just the individual. You as an individual have to do well and expect from yourself and bring the best that you can to the table in all that you do, but that you do that in intentionality for the collective good. And I get in disagreement with some of the sisters sometimes because I and some brothers, about the idea of family, right? So that oftentimes folks will say that family has to be the center of everything and that family comes first. And I take issue with that. I say that's an erroneous analysis. Not that it's not important, but this whole idea of the nuclear family, that it exists when in the context of the community. So the community actually has to come first, and that family evolves in the context of the community. And if the family sees its intention as strengthening the community, then that family then is an advocate for the sustenance of the community, and the community is stronger because the family is focused on the community, and it's the unit of the family is strengthened because it has to be strong to contribute to the community. But if it sees that its structure is to hold and maintain that community together, then it operates very differently, right? It doesn't operate from, well, we got ours, we got our house, we got our money, we good. The community is doing X, Y, Z. No, you flawed. You failed. And then the community is not going to be successful because you've got a whole bunch of successful families, individuals and themselves, that aren't contributing to the community. And that becomes where the problem is. So with regard to trauma, that we've got to – we can address it, but we have to have new ways of thinking about it so that we're not stuck in the things that we've done in the past. And that's what I kind of wrote about in this book I wrote called The Hidden Debate, right? It was a book on affirmative action in South Africa and the United States. But what I was talking about is that the debate itself on affirmative action, or that ideas about affirmative action really aren't about affirmative action, and that we misanalyze it because we're focused on somebody else's worldview. What we really need to focus on is that there's a difference in interpreting core principles in society, liberty, equality, justice. If we focus on those things, that then we see that a European interpretation of equality is different than ours. So we're not going to get to equality if we're basing it on somebody else's interpretation. We're not going to get to what we think about freedom, basing freedom on somebody else's definition. We've got to define these concepts fundamentally for ourselves for the benefit of African people, and that we exist in a world that's global, but that we've got to define our own space and place in that world and how we operate and what freedom means, what democracy may even mean for us, what justice means for us. And then we have a new way of thinking about how to get to that thing, and we relate under the context of Ubuntu, and Ma'at becomes a place for us to transform the very way in which we approach living and being as people.
Right on. It sounds like the perfect transition into reparations then, huh?
Yes, indeed.
Perfect trade.
I like that. So let's move on to reparations. So reparations for me, you know, I've been looking and studying about reparations for a long time. I ran for U.S. Congress in 2020. I'm running for Congress again in New Jersey, the 10th Congressional District again in 2022. And one of the reasons that I'm running is because we need people who represent us being about this mission. And so I'm working hard for that. But one of the platforms is reparations. And I think that we got reparations only partially right when they're talking about it, right? They have this whole thing on H.R. 40, which really is about a study to determine how reparations should be practically implemented. But I think we've got a lot of people who've been doing it, Claude Anderson, lots of folks who've been studying, talking about reparations for many years. There's a brother, Sandy Darity, who's a professor, I believe, at Duke University. He just won a major grant to study it again. So why do we need a H.R. 40 when we got all these studies already done and we've got people who got more grant money to study it again, right? But I say that with regard to reparations, that it needs to be implemented through tiers. The first easiest tier and the obvious tier is through education, and that is that the first piece of reparations is that there should be free education for people of African descent in the United States up to a bachelor's and maybe all the way to a master's, right? So maybe that's a second tier. We do all the way to a master's, and that there should be books. Because it was illegal for us to read and write, illegal for us to know our letters and numbers, even to the extreme that in some places, like in Maryland, Prince George County, that they shut down the educational system in Maryland public schools so that they wouldn't have to integrate. I mean, come on now. That we learned under segregated systems after we didn't have integration, and that even though we had meager resources, that the teachers were fully committed and spent time in making sure that kids learned the best they could in those institutions, right?
How are you talking about this educational system, though? Because this educational system from elementary on to college level indoctrinates white supremacy. Like you are not the norm. You are an anomaly. You know what
right.
I'm saying? Most people who go through the education.
Let me address that. Let me first finish the why, the how for this piece of reparations, and then we'll talk about that miseducation piece. So I agree with you 100% that it's a problem. So but the first piece I was going to say is that. The piece up to the bachelor's is easily fundable because New Jersey actually paved the way for it because we have something called the CCOG grant, which is the Community College Opportunity Grant, and people can go to community college in New Jersey for free. And what the CCOG grant is the bridge grant. So if you get the Pell and other state aid, and say, for instance, your schooling is $5,500 and you were short $1,000, well, the CCOG grant covers the remaining portion of that, and I'm saying a reparation grant to be the same, that it covers whatever that bridge is anywhere in the United States, and so then that would provide for folks to go to school under the auspices of that. Now, the second piece of what you're saying is another kind of major problem, right? So that what is it that we're learning in these institutions, both in primary, secondary, and in college? And clearly, that's one of the reasons why we started an African-centered charter school. That's why I was the president of board of trustees for Adelaide L. Sanford Charter School, right? So it was a charter school dedicated to African-centered education and thinking. Unfortunately, lost the license. That's another whole story. We can talk about that another day. And that school doesn't exist anymore. But it was very African-centered in its focus. The idea was to have the eighth graders go to Africa. So that would be the reward after going from kindergarten to the eighth grade. You do an excellent job. You stay on point. Then you get to participate in this trip going to Africa, right? We also, subsequent to that, we had a African-centered homeschool co-op, right? It was called the Ma'at Shule. And we created a homeschool co-op where parents and others were educating the kids in an African-centered curriculum. And that was going well, just that it was a lot. And so, it was a small thing that involved like eight families, and we were all working together to do this. But, you know, those things take a lot of time and commitment. And so we did that for 3 years. and then we transition back to public school. Of course, the public school has its own set of problems, right? What it teaches and doesn't teach. And all this draconian stuff is being considered today. I just read in the paper today that in, I can't remember what state it is, Dakota. And I don't know if it's North Dakota or South Dakota. But they were removing all the many of the references to Native Americans from the Lakota and other folks from the primary school education. And I'm like, this is an example of the Republicans and white supremacists controlling the educational system. And even when they do it on that level, if it's not on that way, then they control the books. And then what's taught is controlled, right? And but, you know, if we go back and read The Miseducation of the Negro by Carter G. Woodson, he breaks it down to us in a powerful way. His book was written in 1933, but it resonates even today, and that is that when we go through these institutions, basically what he's saying is that we've got to unlearn about 50% or more of what we learn. We got to pull out the tools and get rid of the junk, right? I mean, when I went to school, Africans only existed two or three times. You had slavery, then you had civil rights. And the only two people I remember being taught about in high school was Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. Malcolm X was the devil, and Martin Luther King was the saint. And you know, when you think about it that way, that kind of analysis, some of the kids still get that same story today. And so we've got to first of all, immediately, we're not going to be able to pull all the kids out of school and create our own system, right? So we've got to talk about that there's millions of kids in schools. So what do we do knowing that many of our young folks are going to those schools? We create alternatives. So there's a group called AYA that I mentioned before that has an online African-centered school that is a high school that folks could go to. And they're talking about now, I was on a call with them this week, and they're talking about now developing a Saturday online program. So to supplement and to create the paradigm shifts that our young folks need to bring into the school so that they can raise the right questions, so that they have the right answers, they have the right tools to address the oppressive kind of educational experiences that they go through. So we know they're going to be subjected to a lot. But we've got to provide the tools, understanding that we're going to be in a diverse set of learning environments, right? We're going to have some who are in private schools, some who are in Catholic or Christian schools, some who are in public schools, some in charters, some in Montessori, some who are in all the varieties of schools. And very few in African-centered schools because there's not a whole bunch of African-centered schools. So in that context, we've got to be thorough about how do we create the things. And we can't be, you know, sometimes we just want to say, oh, well, we need our own stuff. Okay, but what's the process? What's the system? What are the tools we take
to get there? So it sounds like we just need to be very specific in our demand for reparations that we need an African-centered educational system from elementary up until, you know, college. And that, I mean, if we're going to be fighting for reparations, we fight for the gusto, you know what I'm saying? Because it is possible. It happened after the 1860s when they started, you know, putting together these colleges, you know. It is possible in our demand, you know what I'm saying? And we should not compromise on that. And when we demand for reparations, that education be a key point, it needs to be African-centered education that is not only African-centered, but that is, you know, put all the bells and whistles. African-centered STEMs education, you know, that way, you know, it's like you started off saying. This, when you started off today's broadcast, you talked about the brother that came up with the fiber optic. Well, it was a brother that invented the Internet, period. You know, it's like, but our people don't know this. So if we have it in the core, from the rooter to the tutor, African-centered, it is possible, and we can make that the way we want it to be. When we put our demands are going to be concrete and fill in all the gray areas is what I'm trying to get at.
I don't think it's that easy, right? Because take New Jersey, for instance. Well, we have something called the Amistad curriculum. It started, it was passed, legislation was passed in New Jersey back in 2002, 2003, I believe it was, that the Amistad legislation, which said that African-centered and African history had to be taught in social studies, I believe from K to 12 or 6 to 12, throughout the entire state, not just in African schools, but in there's over 600 school districts in the state of New Jersey throughout the entire district, right? It's by law. It's supposed to happen. Hasn't happened yet. How long is that, right? You're talking 2002, 2000, so almost 20 years later, it's still not done. So the question is why?
Well,
one is because
exactly.
it is because in the legislation, it didn't demand that in the testing is required to be tested for that. So therefore, there's no accountability measures, right? So that the schools are not required, are not enforcing it, right? Because there's no measures
mandate
to make sure that it's happening, and that becomes a difference. And you know, I'm still a little reluctant to say that the answer is in public schools, because across the nation, some people are the majority of the teachers are not us, and even when they are, some of us are not interested in or willing to teach the things the way in which you're talking about, right? And the way I'm talking
about.
Well,
it would have to be mandated. If we're talking about reparations,
it doesn't matter if it's mandated.
Look, y'all are ahead of the curve. In Texas, they do the exact opposite.
No, I'm saying as
look,
an educator,
Texas,
it doesn't matter if it's mandated, because if even being mandated, if people don't have the desire to teach it in a particular way, that they teach it in a negative way, even though it's mandated. And so I'm saying that we've got to have our own stuff regardless of the mandate. So I'm not saying it shouldn't be mandated, right? So I agree that we should do whatever we have to. We should have the mandate. But at the same time, we have to have our own checks and balances for our own people.
Right.
We can't just rely
right
upon others to do stuff the way in which we want it to be done to the extent, right, that they may talk about the history
yes
of the Panthers in a way that's negative, even though they talk about it, but what do they actually teach? You see what I'm saying? And if they're not teaching something in a positive way, then they actually are undermining the very thing. They have it in the curriculum, but they're not teaching it in a way that's uplifting. They're teaching it in a way that's negative. So they can say,
correct,
I taught the Panthers, but this is what I taught. So that's part of the whole thing with the reparations. And so we're in agreement that it should be something that we look at and implement across the board, and that as we look to do it that way, that we have to be comprehensive about it. And we've got to define how we do that ourselves and not let someone else define for us how that's done.
Right. It has to be self-determined, and we do have to lay it out. Because even that bill that you said, that is way above the curve, but beyond what we even have down here in Texas. And I would like to see that model, because most recently in Texas, folks have been having to fight for – they're trying to take the two times you say they even mentioned Africans in the curriculum, they want to take – slavery out the curriculum, period. It is nowhere, you know. So these models or concepts that you or proposals or bills, and when we're developing when we push for reparations, it needs to have, you know, something like what you're saying, but how we can inform the people, because I've never heard of what you just said until you came
mm-hmm
on the show. This curriculum
right
has been kicked back for 20 years. And why are these things getting kicked back? Let's be honest. It's just like with the H.R. 40. John Conyers sat on that bill for 20-something years. They kept pushing it back. Even Nancy Pelosi now pushed it back. They said, let's get Obama in. There's been too many compromises. There's been too many political manipulations that have taken place and individuals put in place that have been sitting on this stuff. But if we make the information aware to the people,
yeah,
then that's what if we politicize the people, just sort of like what you said earlier, how can we, you know, maybe into the Saturday programs, but, you know, these are great, you know, reparations will happen if it's this generation or next, but we put in it, we need to put all of all the meat and all the gravy and all the teeth into it.
Yeah.
I'm running
for U.S. Congress under the context of fighting for reparations. So that's an ongoing struggle. But the other piece is that I think that that I'm going to push, that I've been pushing, is that even with a demand for H.R. 40, the other thing is that we've got to internationalize our struggle about reparations, because it's not just about the U.S. government. It's about the corporations. It's about the other countries. It's about all the holistic ways. Because if you think about it, what happened is that when a slave ship was transported from across the sea, that during the European slave trade, it wasn't an Atlantic slave trade. That's part of our language. The Atlantic Ocean never enslaved anybody. It was European slave trade.
That's right.
So when we're talking about the European slave trade, we got to realize, though, that there were places like Lords of London that insured the cargo being enslaved people, right? So that even if they didn't get here, they still got paid. So we want Lords of London to pay, right? The struggle, the international struggle has been taken to another level by some of the countries on the continent, by Jamaica and other places. They're further along. We need to internationalize our discussion about that so that we have a subcommittee on H.R. 40 or whatever, or have that maybe even the whole committee, but at least a subcommittee in there that is talking about reparations on a global level, and that becomes a way of doing it. Because we talk about it, because some people are just trying to look at it as really what I call the British reparations, because they're talking about 1619, and I think that's a flaw. Africans were already brought here and enslaved by the Spanish in the 1500s. We've got to hold them accountable.
And the Portuguese, that's right.
The Portuguese,
yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir.
The Germans, all of them. They all have to be held accountable. And we are letting them off the hook by talking about 1619. We're letting them off the hook by only talking about what happened within the context of the American slave trade. We want the American slave trade, those who were engaged in it, like the churches, the universities, all of them have to pay, right? It's not just about the government. The government is only a portion of the entity. We want to hold all of them accountable because they all are accountable. They all were engaged. They've all benefited for hundreds of years now. And until we look at it in that way, we're flawed in our analysis, and we're going to undermine the compensation that is available to us that is necessary for the types of atrocities that have happened.
I didn't want to warn y'all, but listen, I told you we had a special guest coming. I didn't want to listen. Everybody listening, hit that damn number one button. I'm pretty sure people want to have something to say. I say it all the time, two things, and special, just real quick. Warrior, builder, healer. That's exactly how you put it, Dr. Calfani?
Yes.
Guess what? I say it all the time. Everyone can't do everything, but everyone can do something. Plain and simple. Hit that number one button. I know a lot of people are listening. Black power.
Black power, black power. Yes, Dr. Calfani, you were right on point. Go ahead, Brother Catchers.
Yeah, it's more of a just, you know, a holler back, a talk black to me point, as you were talking about the fact of how these corporations are instilled inside of these nations. And you brought up the Berlin Conference multiple times. You know, it reminds me, you mentioned a few books. One of the ones that I always reference on this show is Kwame Nkrumah's book, The Handbook of Revolutionary Warfare. And in the book, he talks about collective imperialism. And it kind of struck a note with me because that's what he talks about. You know, these people, you know, these were families. It even brings me back to when you talk about the family and the community. You know, these plantations were families. You know, this was mama, cousin, uncle, daddy business, family business, trading Africans as commerce. You know, and when you started to have these insurrections, these uprisings across this nation in the so-called Caribbean, you've seen them make a very concerted effort to bring themselves under one name. So the Jackson and the Johnson family plantation becomes, you know, Jackson and Johnson pharmaceuticals, you know, and all of the things that they have incurred from, you know, abuse and genocide and ethnic cleansing, it has been funneled back into their illegal criminal settler community. You know, so when we
look
at it.
That's exactly what I was going to get at.
Exactly. It just struck a note with me through the research that I've done, you know. So I have to, you know, make sure that you know that we this is something that not in the point of this show to give this information every night, Doctor. You're almost like a reflection tonight, because much if not all of what you have said on this show, although you have highlighted it to a point where it is clicking and hitting, right, due to your experience and your work. But you are almost reflecting the same, you are exactly reflecting the same frequency, you know, that we project every night on this show. So it's very powerful, Black Power, positive people.
Yes, sir.
And
not only that,
the fact that you are bringing this before the floor, because I'm going to be honest, you want to follow, but I watch some of these dang conferences, and I'm like, dang, where's the passion? Where's the spirit in these people speaking on this cause? They about to put me to sleep. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, how you know, like, where's your? It's one thing to have an intellectual discussion, but to be able to reach the hearts and minds of the people, you know, to even reach those people that you're gonna go before to represent our people on this matter. You know what I'm saying? And just to pull back real quickly to add to what Captain said, I was looking at this document. It said in 1878, I believe, maybe 1868. Britain incorporated the United States of America. And I was like, that's interesting. Why would you incorporate after slavery? Because you're trying to create a shell entity to cover up your dirty work. So that's what you were hitting it right on the nose. Who are these families? Lords of London, all of these different corporations. Why did you create this straw entity, these shell entities to cover up all of these people responsible? So yes, sir, brother. You got us ears wide open. You know what I'm saying? About to holler at the moon when you're hitting those frequencies. Black power.
We're about to go on mute.
Let's go on mute. Let the brother talk, because you can fire us up. We'll keep going. Go ahead, brother. You got 30 minutes. Keep firing us up.
Yes. Well, I got another call at 10. So we got a few more minutes that we can be on here. And look, I'm willing to come back. I'm excited to be here. I think that we've got a lot of things that we've got to do as a people, and we've got to develop a systematic plan. And one of the failings that we have, you know, I've worked with many, many organizations over the course of my life, right? So in working with those organizations to bring about a systematic transformation of our people, the failings that I see that we've replicated over and over again have been an unwillingness to have a little bit more flexibility among self, right? That we have our rigidity about the things that we do, and so that's why we end up with multiple chapters or multiple branches, really, multiple organizations of the same organization, and that's been happening time and time again. It happened with the Panthers. It happened with the UNIA, having with all these different organizations over and over again, we've had these splinter groups. And it's not that we shouldn't necessarily sometimes have a way to do so and that there's benefits in that, but we've got to get to the place where we don't allow other folks to undermine us in the process of when that happens, right? So that one of the things that we've failed at, and I say that we've failed at is learning how the infiltrators infiltrate, right? How is it that those who've infiltrated our fundamental organizations have been the ones to bring about our demise, right? If you watch the movie, Judas and the Black Messiah. I mean, it wasn't really even a movie about the Panthers. It was really about
who Judas was, and so telling this other story about something. But I think that, you know, it would have been another a narrative if it had been a story about the Black Messiah and Judas, right? It would have been a completely different movie. But I think that when we look at that, when we look at Garvey's movement, who undermined Garvey? His number one guy was the J. Edgar Hoover's first informant. And that's how Garvey got undermined. Malcolm X, his number one security dude, was a NYPD undercover guy, because even the captains and stuff who were there didn't know he was on a different elite team, right? So who are the places and people who are undermining all these entities? And even today, right, the same scenario keeps going on, and we've got to raise the question, and we've got to be insightful and thoughtful about this. Who's listening to the call today, right? So we know that those things are happening, and as they happen, we've got to be and have in place systems of understanding. We've got to look at it as a way of understanding how chess is played and who are the players, who are the determiners of the rules of chess, who are the changers of the rules of chess. Oh, I thought chess was played this way. Well, we have this new rule here today. Oh, you didn't know that? And so then you become victim to something that you didn't understand because somebody else is running the game and they're changing the rules as they go along to suit what their analysis, what their agenda is, and we've got to find out where we fit within that agenda so that we're creating a pathway to our own upliftment. Right? We've got to make sure that in whatever we do that before I say that, let me take a step back. Let's go back and look at Du Bois, Garvey, and Booker T. If you stop for a minute, if the three of them had come together, where would we be today? If the three of them together, right, that would be Garvey came to the U.S. to work with who? Booker T. Right, we don't talk about that, but go back and look at what Garvey said. That's what he wanted to learn how to make that thing happen. But had Booker T. and Garvey and Du Bois unified, and Garvey had this, Du Bois had this writing ability and this voice and this tool through his work with the NAACP that he was oftentimes at war with, right? Because it was mostly run by Europeans, but he controlled the crisis, and the crisis told the story of the African experience. And so if he, in using that, and Garvey in his newspaper had worked together to tell that story and to do the things, because we needed to be able to build our own institutions. Think about this. The bricks at the institution today that Booker T. built were built by Africans, young folks who were going to school. They built the bricks for their own school. Now tell me we don't need to be able to build our own bricks today. We got to go to Home Depot and buy them. Think about if we had the skill set to build our own bricks in our own community and build our own buildings today. Would that be revolutionary or not?
Definitely.
But we don't have that skill set anymore. Tell me how many people you know you can find out here who know how to build, not just build a building, but know how to make the bricks for the building. Tell me how many people you know, right? We don't even think to do that. We think to go to Home Depot or some other good store and get the bricks to build a building as opposed to creating the whole thing that we need to do from the ground up. And that's where we get that level of ingenuity we've got to go back to, right? If you look at some of the things that the young folks are doing on the continent now, building their own planes and helicopters recycling machines and all kinds of stuff they're doing, that we need to be innovating that way here as opposed to sitting on the corner waiting for something. I mean, I said I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. The folks who I know who I grew up with, I went to L.A. High School. I wasn't in the suburbs somewhere. I went to L.A. High School in Los Angeles, right? And so there's people I know that's probably still sitting on the corner today doing the same things they've been doing for the last 30, 40 years. We got to have a different reality, a different analysis. We can't afford that to be our story. Because in the end, it goes back to my original point in the beginning. I was saying about the elephants, right? that we need to, as we're going through the things that we do, we've got to walk and stomp like an elephant. So when you are looking to transform the reality of the word of the world around you, stomp like an elephant, because you're leaving that impression for the young folks who come after you, right? You're leaving the legacy for the folks who come after you. You're writing a song today, and you're singing a song. Let that song be something that's uplifting and stomp like an elephant. When you're doing the things that are revolutionary in a way, like Martin Luther King Jr. said, we need a revolution of thought. He didn't. We just focus on the "I have a dream." Let's talk about his idea about revolution. Let's talk about his idea that he said that maybe I've led my people into a burning house when he was talking about integration. When you walk like an elephant. Leave some footprints behind so that the next generation knows how to get where you've been, and extend that. Let us not walk in a way that we live with a heavy heart, but that we uplift the essence of who we are. We breathe differently. We do the things necessary to transform our reality because we walk like an elephant. When we build our families and we're developing that nuclear family, let that family be something that is unifying us to work for the community and not just for our own self-interest, because we're walking like an elephant. When we are doing the things that we're raising money and creating institutions, let us create those institutions knowing that somebody else is going to take our place, and let us walk like an elephant. When we are going and doing the things that we're doing, let's look at those Africans who made pyramids thousands of years ago and see that those pyramids are standing the test of time, and that we're here today talking about those pyramids, talking about the ideas of Ma'at, because those folks who wrote those things, who did those things are living today. And so that let us make sure that we're letting them live today in the things that we do today, because we're walking like an elephant. But let me ask you, and I'm going to leave on this, I'm going to ask you, what pyramids are you building today? Pyramids are you building today? In 1,000 years, where we live as Africans in Texas and New Jersey and wherever else we are, who's going to be able to look around and say, dang, those Africans was doing something in all those places? Because we see the pyramids they left behind. What pyramids are you building today? I thank y'all for inviting me on the show. You know, this is a great opportunity to come on.
We thank you, brother.
And move and address the folks. And I say that we've got to, you know, I'm like I said, I'm willing to come back. I'd be honored to be able to be invited back and do whatever we got to do to cover these issues, because there's some other stuff we need to talk about, and we don't necessarily have time to do it today. But thank you for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. And it sounds like you got a project for Brick City. Brick City need to be having a vocational program to build bricks. Yeah, we can model that down in these different cities. That's practical. That's mm-hmm. something we can do right now. Reparations Ashe. Now.
Ashe.
Ashe. Well, much luck, much success to you. And when you become congressman, we look forward to you representing us. We are confident that you have the integrity that our people need to fight for the much-needed cause of not only reparations, but all the issues that I know you're going to demand and put on the table for our people. So it is an honor to have you on tonight, and it's a pleasure, and it's indeed historical that we had you on this broadcast. And, of course, we will, you know, when you become congressman, we sure want you to come back. You know what I'm saying?
Without a doubt.
Black power, King, black power. But right, New Jersey got some heavy hitters out there, right? Some heavy hitters. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. So we got callers on the line. I know y'all been waiting. Our guest has to go off. But what we'll do is, you know, we can continue tonight's discussion. And any
if you want
specific...
me to take one or two calls, I'll take one or two before I have to go.
All right. All right. Brother Captain.
All right. Black Power. We got one of our field marshals calling in. Out of Fort Worth, Dallas, I mean, we got Brother Rostone on the line. Black Power, brother.
Black Power. Black Power. Black Power and more Black Power, brothers. You hear me?
Yes, sir.
Man, it's such a wonderful show, man. Y'all, like y'all said, man, you're buying us up, brother. For real. getting the fire in our souls, man. And I love that. I've been wanting to thank you, brother. Keep it up. And
yes,
guess what?
Brother, you're welcome.
We gonna have your back until the day we hit the dirt.
Ashe. And vice
versa,
brother.
That's how we do it.
We work together.
I'm ready to go whenever we ready. We ready. Just like that. I love y'all brothers, man. I love y'all so much, and y'all put up that show every night, and I can't get enough of it. I just want to tell y'all, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for the education and all of that y'all giving, our information, everything y'all giving. I'm taking all that in, and I hope everybody else is too, because it's going to help you in the long run. Fuck the long run. It's going to help you right now. What I just want to do. Got fire in my soul, and I'm just ready to go fight for these people whenever I get that phone call. Black Power, I love y'all. Keep your head up, brother. We got your back. Free Ozone, bitches. Black Power.
I say.
Black Power, Free Ozone. That's right. Yes, sir, Califani. Thank
love
you so much.
Yes, absolutely. And, of course, we have our co-host every night on the panel tonight. Brother Emmanuel, Black Power. Can you hear us, brother?
Black Power, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Black Power.
Their brother got to go. You got a quick question for him?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, that last statement, you know, at the end, that was very magnificent. You said, what pyramids are we building? What are we going to leave behind? Because a pyramid, and what we see now, is in a ruined state. But in the original state, the pyramids are energy sources that collect energy from the outside and brings earth, life. And so saying that and letting our people know what the pyramids truly are, that's what we truly are. No matter how we look now, we might look like a ruin of ourselves, but our original selves are things that bring energy, bring life to the people of the planet. So that statement you made was very, very profound, and I hope my brothers and sisters truly grasp the depth of what you are saying, because each one of us are pyramid builders, and regardless if we like it or not, you need to understand there's a bunch of pyramids built all over, but the most important ones are the ones we built in the places we built them. So our lives, wherever we are right now, listening and not listening, and we'll hear it in the future. You are the most important for your people. We have to all be that. Pyramids for our babies in the future. They do need to know what the true pyramid is. So I thank you, brother. I just wanted to say that, man. That caught me, man. You know, all that you were saying, you know, magnificent. And the rest of the clips, the show tonight as a whole, what the General Crystal was saying that brought you into it, man, this was just magnificent, but it topped the whole meal with that great dessert that just stuffs us. And that is something for us to keep thinking about and make sure we constantly are building our pyramid and bringing life to our families, man. That's our divine purpose. Black Power, brother. Black Power.
All right, brother. I say. And, you know, just let me comment on that real quick. And I think that he made the connection that back to the beginning of what I was speaking on, and that is that when I talked about our bodies and what we know in terms of our DNA, that us being that living pyramid, that the story of who we are and what we bring to the table and what we're contributing back to that pyramid, that pyramid in us is a living thing, right? So that the energy is there. We just got to tap into it. And once we tap into the essence of what and who we are, then we transform the being of the self into something that's vital and that can do something that is contributory and uplifting for our people. You see, that becomes the key, right, is that to build the physical pyramid, you have to have already built, right? You got to be like Imhotep. You got to already have built that internal self pyramid, and that the physical external pyramid is a reflection of that internal, right? So that's what the brother helped us to draw the connection to right there, that connection between the physical and the self, right? Because we're spiritual beings having a physical experience, and that we transform that physical experience that we're having, that spiritual experience that we're having, into the edifices that we bring. So that if we understand that, even the meals that we make for our families have to reflect that, right? Because we're making a meal, providing some food for somebody that we want them to be nourished, to fortify themselves for coming to deal with the battle, because that food is also for the battle, but it's also for the building. It's also for the healing, right? So this food itself has to be that. And that's why when we go back and think about the food and where it was made in the South, that it was made with that love. You getting this fast food is not made with no love. It's something that's happening. That's the reason why we have a void in our diet, because we spend so much time eating food that is not nourished in its creation for us. We've got to be eating food and doing things and being spiritually reflective and building that internal pyramid, so that we get to the place of outside that we are strong and we're structured in that, because that becomes the essence of what we do.
Sir, I say, right on, Black Power. Yes, sir. Wow, brother. Yeah, we can't get enough. We got to get you back. You know what I'm saying? I know you're going to be extra fired up for your next program. You know what I'm saying? You got our brain thinking. We're going to keep pushing this. We're going to remind everybody to share this. If you didn't catch it tonight, you can catch it on demand. Make sure you share this broadcast. And make sure that if you're in the New Jersey area, that you vote for our brother Cal Funny, Dr. Cal Funny, that is. And as the brother said, Brother Rasta, we have to protect our great ones such as this. So, you know, he don't spit that kind of fire without having opposition. But there's no victory without a challenge. And he's more than capable for the challenge and to handle the task at hand. And it, clearly the ancestors made him this way. All right, then, Black Power.
All right, and
so
let me
thank
just
you once again, brother.
You know, they can look at my campaign stuff, at least from the last campaign, at akilkhafani.com.
Yes.
That's akilkhafani.com. And then if they just look up and do any search for me online, you'll see, you know, we got a talk show. I got a bunch of clips of me doing stuff. So just look up Akil Kafani. There's Akil in Chicago. That's not me. There's another one in Atlanta. That's not me. I'm out of Jersey. So when you look up Akil Kafani, I'm at the Africana Institute, and I got my own stuff that I'm doing. So you look us up that way, you'll find out who we are and what I'm doing. And if you have a question, you can always hit me on an email. It's drkafani@gmail.com. That's drkhafani@gmail.com. So hit me up, and we'll continue to build. All right, y'all, power to the people, and I'll be in touch with you soon, and y'all stay strong.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Stay strong, Brother Black Power. Thank you so much. Right on. Wow, brothers and sisters. Brother Greg, you bought us another great one. You got that dugout lined up with pinch hitters, god dang it. We ain't doing nothing but hitting all stars out the gate.
Hey, we got all stars out the bat. Hey, we're gonna have a lineup that's gonna, man, if this lineup doesn't motivate and get some fire under some people's asses, I don't know what to say. I really wouldn't know what to say. I'm gonna bring them from left field, center field, a big fullback coming out the backfield. We gonna bring them all. That's the goal.
They got a fullback in baseball.
Hey, that's
a new baseball. It's a new baseball.
That's right. That we gonna come up with our own sport. Our own sport. That's how hard we gonna be hitting them.
I just love it. I just love it. I just love it. I love all of y'all, man. You know, it's so much going on in this world. You know, brothers and sisters, and we gotta, like the brother said, we gotta breathe. We got to breathe. We got to breathe. We send it back to work, back to work. You know, it is indeed necessary that we fuel our minds with right knowledge. It is necessary that we put together plans of action. It is indeed necessary that we have a great network of people around you that are on the same frequency, and that we get down to the necessary work that must be done. We have work to do. Lord knows we got a lot of healing to do. Lord knows we got a lot of building to do. Lord knows we got a lot of studying to do. But these are all things that not only are we all capable of, we do it already. You know what I'm saying? We just got to keep fine-tuning. We got to, you know, sometimes, brothers and sisters, we have to step back for a second. Just step back for a second and look at where we are individually. Assess our situation. You know what I'm saying? Are we slipping? Where are we strong on? What do we need to tighten up on? What have we been holding on to that we need to let go? You know, what are some things that we need to self-correct? Let's keep it real with ourselves so that we can be as beneficial as possible to not only ourselves and our family and our communities, but our people as a whole. We will tell no lies and claim no easy victories. Tell no lies and claim no easy victories. Do we make mistakes? Yeah. But the things that we do wrong should far outweigh, the things that we do right should far outweigh the things that we may have done wrong or incorrectly or made a mistake on. And we should be quick to fix those things, not to be in denial. You know what I'm saying? It's like we can say we want a million motherfuckers to show up next week, but if we know that we have the capacity to bring in, you know, a few hundreds or a few thousands, do not shirk or turn your nose up at the few hundred no more than you would turn your nose up at a million. Because if you touch one soul, you've done a great work. You know what I'm saying? So let's motivate one another. Let's build one another. Any issues that we may need to address, we're not going to address any issues all out publicly and blah, blah, blah. Unless, of course, we're being attacked, then we will defend ourselves. But whatever issues that we need to address to strengthen us or to address that we may need to ask help for one another from, let's do this as a family, you know. And, you know, I can say there's times when I need to just like, oh, my God, this is a bit much. Give me a moment. And the other comrades will step up and say, you know what, Sister Crystal, we got you. There are times when I say, oh, that's a great brother right there. That's a great sister. Let's bring them on in. Let's let them work their magic. Let them do it. It's too much work to do. It's too much work to do for us to think we're going to do it all individually. Our collectiveness is what's so powerful. Last Friday, we raised 10 grand, almost 15, a little over 10 grand collectively. Our goal was to raise 100,000. We raised 10% of that. That's nothing to throw our, snuck our nose up about. We weren't going to say we want to raise 10,000 when we want to raise 100,000. We might only raise $100. You know what I'm saying? So now that we know and we have got a taste of what we can do collectively in unity, let's keep that momentum going. You know, some people say, oh, maybe we should fall back. Fall back for what? And those, we have obstacles. We have so many obstacles. Our main obstacle is the white man, the cracker, the devil. And people will be like, oh, y'all have offended the white man. I'm going to pull back from y'all. Really? You want to pull back because we've offended the white man. Well, did you not know who we were? You know.
Yes. Whoa.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, buddy man. You Black Power.
General, I love you. And as you just said, in your spirit, we have to fix each other. So I want you to, and all my other brothers and sisters, I want us to start something, something that should have been started, but this is the time for it. How the general said, we ain't perfect, and we do more right than wrong. Well, I want us to know something. We are children of the Most High, and the Most High has never made anything imperfect. There is nowhere in your book that says you was imperfect. So everything we do, our general Khaled told us, we are products of learned behavior, and we are the victims of things. But our Father, how he made us, we are perfect. And so everything we do, we don't do nothing wrong. You are perfect. All my people, that's not conceited. That's not how they lie and say, oh, man, perfect. No. We don't got to be Christ-like. We don't got to be. Why? Because we are the Christ. We are the Father's children. And there's nothing we can do on this planet that is a sin in our Father's eyes. So let it stop being a sin in our eyes. Tell us who we truly are. Perfect vessels on this planet. And Crystal, everything you have done in your life has been perfect. Has been perfect. Everything that happens in this life, even some of the hardest stuff for us to deal with, is the divine will of our Father in a perfect way. It is our time to understand it and be thankful for it. I love you. Love you all.
Love you back, brother.
Black Power.
Black Power.
I love the hell out of you, Brother Emmanuel. I love you, Sister Crystal. I love you, Brother Greg.
Love you, Brother Ken.
Man, I love all
love
you,
Brother Greg.
Man.
Brother Robson, yeah, everybody.
Black
Come on, man. Y'all know it's a family thing. It's good to have
Black
power
love.
Too. Cause
Black Power. Black love. Black power.
Black power.
Black
power.
Black power. It is. Black love. Black power.
Black love.
Yo. Yo. Y'all need to hit us up at mbpp.org. Mbpp.org. I know you said I put my application in. When you going to hit me back? We catching up on the backlog right now, y'all. We've been rocking and rolling and rolling and rocking. Hit us up at mbpp.org. Send us a good contribution on that Cash App. Cash App, $, Black Power, dollar. Freedom ain't free, y'all. Cash App, Black Power Dollar. We working on, we have a few little issues with that donate button. These people always messing with our resources, but we got a solution for that. But hit us up if you want to join, or if there's some more information, some information that you want to follow up on that you heard on tonight or any of our programs, hit us up at mbpp.org. Young Gun, take us out.
Yo, man, I just want to say to everybody that's listening on this broadcast, we want y'all to understand something about the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. There is nothing that we wouldn't do for our people in reasonable measure to bring about the liberation of our people. And that's why we're so grateful to have brothers and sisters, you know, who come on here and pushing in the same line that we pushing. Man, we got brothers and sisters that's pushing from different channels. Man, we just got to come together and make this shit happen. You know, we just got to come together and make this shit happen. One of the most beautiful things about all the comrades on this line, one of the most beautiful things about Black people in general, is y'all know that thing they say, oh, Black folks don't know how to work together. No, because on Saturday, last Saturday, we raised, what was it, Crystal, $15,000? We raised $3,000 just from 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock. Quit talking about what we can't do and get up on some revolution. Check us out at New Black Panther Party. mbpp.org, join the new Black Panther Party. Donate to the fundraising efforts of Comrade Ozone, and we're going to try our best to assist so he can have the best legal representation possible. You can donate to the link www.westandwithozone.com, westandwithozone.com. You can send a Cash App. You can support the Brothers Legal Defense by sending a Cash App to $
Ozone Legal. Don't forget about the link that we set up, justice4ozone.com, if you want to, because the brother's in there. He's got to go through the day-to-day things. He's got to have a way to contact his family. He's got to eat. So we say he can donate to those measures at justice4ozone.com. Three channels, three opportunities that we have for hands-on helping one of those that help us. This has been New Black Panther Party Radio, interrupting your daily bullshit. Day 527, we heard tonight from Dr. Akil Kalfani, great black man, politician, author, professor, and everything in between king here in our black nation. We heard from our national minister of culture, Brother Greg, who brought Dr. Kalfani on, and we thank you, brother, comrade, great work, brother. Keep it up. We right here with your black power. We heard from our great national chairwoman, Sister Krista Muhammad. You heard from me, Brother Captain Sadiq. You heard from
our great, chief of staff.
Come on. Come on, man. Look, black at your family. Black at you, because as great as we are, we great because we are great. Boy, it feels good to be a part of such a great, wonderful bunch of people. We mean all across the African diaspora. All night.
Spiritual warriors. Y'all been
talking about DNA. Yeah, man. Y'all been talking about DNA all night, man. It's just all this stuff is in my head, and everything is just going crazy, man. I got to drop it. I got to drop it. It's been our
Kendrick
DNA.
Lamar.
Let's go. Black power. Black power.
I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Cocaine quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though, ambition, flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, is born like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, which yells you a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your fucking head. This that puts the kids to bed. This that I got realness. I just kill shit cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil that rot inside my DNA. I got off, I got trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, then win again like Wimbledon I serve. Yeah, that's him again, the sound that engine in is like a bird. You see fireworks and Corvette tire skirt the boulevard. I know how you work, I know just who you are. See, use a bitch, your hormones probably switch inside your DNA. All that sucker shit inside your DNA. Daddy probably snitched. Heritage inside your DNA. Backbone don't exist. Burn on side a jellyfish I gauge. See my pedigree, most definitely don't tolerate the front. Shit I been through probably offend you. This is Parler's oldest son. I know murder, conviction, burners, boosters, burglars, ballers, dead. Redemption scholars, father dead. With kids and I wish I was fed. Forgiveness, yeah, soldier's DNA. Born inside the beast. My expertise.